What's going on, guys? Justin here. March has arrived and we are only weeks away from the big tournament. Yes, that tournament. Make sure you head to BetOnline and open an account today to get in on their $100,000 Bracket Madness contest starting March 15th. And remember, the NBA and XFL are still going strong, so whatever your passion is, BetOnline is the place to be for all your betting needs. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for your 50% sign-up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again.
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton. Some rhythm.
And he got it. Young Ball continues to wear him out.
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the... Oh, my God. I almost forgot the podcast name. I did forget.
Leave that in. Leave that in. Seriously. I'm dead serious. That would be funny.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network, brought to you by our friends at betonline.ag as well as Untucked. I'm your host, Justin Rohn. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. I'm forgetting your name. I'm forgetting the podcast name. How's it going, buddy?
You're a hot mess, pal.
Yeah, and I really shouldn't be. I had a day off today. I should be well rested. I should be ready to go, but look at me. I'm falling apart as we start this. Luckily, the Cavs have not been falling apart. They swept their weekend series against the Denver Nuggets and the San Antonio Spurs. Carter, did you expect a win, let alone two wins with how many guys were kind of out of the lineup this weekend?
I'm just waiting for you to find go do the work and finding the audio of me saying we won't win a game till like late March.
That would be such a great bit if I wasn't profoundly lazy.
Yeah, it's okay. That's why this podcast is never going to go anywhere. Definitely doesn't have anything to do with the team's being 19 and 45 and us being profoundly mediocre.
Hey, man, we've matched the win total of last season. We are 5-5 with JB Bickerstaff, and things are kind of looking all right. Like, I'm having fun. I'm going into games not dreading when the Cavs have a lead. Like, I still expect us to blow it to some extent, but I have more confidence than I used to have. One of the biggest changes, though, is with Bayline, it seemed like every third quarter was an absolute disaster. The other team came out, they made their halftime adjustments, and the Cavs fell apart. That hasn't been happening this season, and they've made some comebacks in the second half. They've held on to leads. I'm really impressed with how this team's playing.
Yeah, it's almost like they should have been playing this way the whole fucking time. it's really interesting. I mean, I think we're in a really fun spot because instead of enjoying the recent stretch of competitive play, our Discord buddies are arguing about whether they'll lose their draft pick.
Oh my God. Okay.
That's how I know things are going well.
I think that's a little bit optimistic. I think that the Cavs are pretty safe when it comes to losing their or retaining their draft pick this year, unless something absolutely terrible happens in the lottery where 3-4 teams jump ahead of them. But I think it's going to be pretty safe. I don't think they're going to win a ton of games to close out the year. But I am feeling pretty good about my over bet to start the season.
What was the line at? What, like 22 and a half?
I got it at 21 and a half. So I felt good about
easy money.
That. Yeah.
That's a put your legs up and in your easy chair and relax winner.
The one thing I've learned with the Cavs is expect the unexpected, though, and anything is possible. It is interesting to know. Know what I've noticed, Carter? And I hate to go very serious so early in the podcast, but I can't help but notice that this mini turnaround happened as soon as Kevin Porter Jr. was replaced with Matthew Dellavedova in the lineup.
What a terrible take.
That Nate Duncan take. All right. to get you everyone in the joke. Like, we can assume everybody is on Twitter, but to clarify, after the Cavs beat the Denver Nuggets, Nate Duncan tweeted out that he couldn't help but notice that the Cavs had turned things around lately with Darius Garland out and Matthew Dellavedova running the show, which is funny for many reasons. One, that was pretty much one of the first good Delly games of the year. Two, Garland had only been out for three games, and that was their first win, and they were 4-3 with Garland in the lineup. What a take. That feels like a case of, I have to pretend like I'm watching every single team every game of the year and have opinions on everybody.
Yeah, it's really tough, you know, because like
he got dunked on.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like this is just like a real casualty of trying to do the watch everyone stuff. Is like, and I definitely have been caught doing it too, so I'm sympathetic to the old dunked on basketball. Because like sometimes you just start feeling yourself.
Remember, you bet the Thunder over, and forgot that Paul George left, but it still worked out.
Still was spot on. That's how right I was about that core. That's called positive spin, pal.
Yeah.
I just feel like he was feeling himself. He's like, oh, here's a zag people aren't ready for. And you got burnt.
Yeah.
No way around it.
Yeah, you hate to see it. And so the Cavs end their homestand there with two wins, obviously. Now they head on the road. And the schedule does get easier. So I can see why some people would say, hey, we beat Denver, we beat San Antonio. Maybe we'll continue our winning ways here on the road against Chicago and against Charlotte. But I don't know necessarily if you can expect. We didn't have that kind of consistency when LeBron was here. Like we would drop games, and I think that's going to continue to happen. I do hope that both Garland and KPJ are back in the lineup soon, because I was really enjoying what the three guards had going. But I think ultimately.
Well, I think it's also worth saying it's going to be really important to get those guys back because Delly is ruining the tank, bro.
You know, Delly going Magic Johnson on us and just dropping dimes everywhere was not exactly something I expected. Against the Spurs, he was pretty brutal in the first half, and then he just put together another great game out of nowhere. And
you know what, Justin? I actually think it's a little time for you to eat some crow because you're too mean to Delly. Like I can acknowledge that he sucks most of the time, but you act like he's never done anything good, and I don't appreciate it.
I mean, he's done good things. It was really great.
I think you have lingering Kyrie-related resentment about Delly.
Listen, it was very, very nice of him to nosedive into Kyle Korver's leg and break it and pull Al Horford's shoulder and get him thrown out of a playoff game. That really was helpful. Delly was fun. Delly was a quality backup point guard for a while there. Once the Bucks made that contract offer to him, I wanted absolutely no part of that. And I think everybody on the team felt the same way. That's still one of my favorite memories was LeBron. The second that offer came out, it was, enjoy Milwaukee. I have no real problems with Delly. I was on board.
Yeah. You just don't like him as all.
I don't dislike him for whatever that's worth.
I think you kind of do.
I don't think so. I honestly don't think I dislike Delly.
Chase Darmy, weigh in on this one. Does Justin hate Delly? Yeah. I say yes. Yeah. He says only kind of not no.
No, I don't hate Delly. He's perfectly serviceable. And when he is on, the experience is a lot of fun because there's one thing I love almost as much as I love the Cavs, and that's people getting mad at anything to do with the Cavs. Like when Delly is good and the opposing fans are just infuriated on Twitter, that is one of the most enjoyable experiences going right now for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
I just think he does some stuff that, like, I feel like he has more value. I think I like him more than you just because he does stuff that I just see Delly and Garland not know how to do on occasion as a passer. Like, it's like he's got.
Was that a Freudian slip? You said Delly and Garland.
Sorry, Sexton and Garland, where like it's just like little like keep the just knowing where everyone on the floor is on offense kind of plays, not like, you know, like Chris Paul, LeBron level manipulation, but just like adult basketball plays that you never really got out of Brandon Knight. You never really got out of you know, you never get out of Sexton and Garland, or rarely do. And you know, like, the fact that he can be even remotely effective while he's got this busted ass jumper and is still deadly, like some of his layup attempts on cuts in that Spurs game were like he was jumping after catching the ball at full speed on the way to the rim. And
he's one of the most squirrely players I've ever witnessed play basketball. God,
just couldn't move. Couldn't jump at all. It was just like the fact that he can do anything, I just think is a testament to his general smarts.
And this
team is pretty short on those.
I'll say this. I would be okay with bringing him back for a minimum deal next year. Like, just to have him as a guy to practice against, just to stick around. I mean, he's a good locker room presence. I would not complain if he was back next year.
Make the kids work hard in practice. Why not?
Yeah. And I think this is also an example. So I think earlier in his career, you could count on Dele to come in, make an impact in whatever minutes he was playing, and kind of be somewhat consistent in that role. Now you're kind of seeing it where, okay, he's going to have tough stretches. He's not as ready. He's not as consistent. But when he gets these extended runs, he kind of does settle into a groove. Like, I think sometimes he plays his way through those slumps. And if he's only getting 10 minutes a game, which is like, you probably don't want him playing that many more minutes than that at this point in his career.
I don't want him playing that.
No. But if you do have injuries and you need him to play more minutes, I think he plays his way out of those slumps and he gets better as the game goes along, which, I mean, if you're talking about third string point guard or a guy you're locking up on a minimum deal, I'm perfectly fine with that. I do want to talk about our other point guard, Colin Sexton, because I think this was one of the first times where I was like, you know what? He deserved that nomination for Player of the Week, and fuck Norman Powell for getting it over him.
Yeah, you know, you're cool losing a Player of the Week to you know, some superstar. To Giannis. But Norm, in this economy?
Yeah, and to Norm's credit, 31 points, 56% from the field, 2.3 steals, and the Raptors went 3-0. I get it. I've enjoyed what the Sex Man's doing a little bit more.
How much help does Norman Powell need?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's basically in the Steph Curry role, where he's kind of settled in as that third star and is coasting along, riding the coattails of Pascal Siakam.
Hey, man, he's really good off ball.
Yeah.
Man, it's tough, you know? I mean, because Sexton's stretch is really coincided with him actually helping the team.
Yeah. Sexton, again, he averaged 31 points as well. I believe it was 4.3 assists over the stretch, shooting over 56% from the floor. Like, he's been really, really good. Denver is a damn good team, and he was a massive part of winning there. Obviously, he had his career high this week. That was a shit ton of fun. And then for him to go against San Antonio, where he kind of struggled at times, second night of a back-to-back, but he just kept bringing the energy. And by the end of the night, he was a big part of why they won the game.
Yeah, he had a really wild game where at one point he got benched so Bickerstaff could go to his vaunted three-center lineup and just stay super big with Jetty on the floor. It was literally Jetty, Dele, Nance, Love, and Drummond, and somehow it was working. I just can't wait. I'm telling you that there is value when your team sucks and just playing your best players, even if it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, like, they're going to be shorthanded again because our friend of the podcast, Spencer Davies, just tweeted out, Cavs will be without Tristan Thompson against the Bulls, as well as Darius Garland, Dante Exum, Kevin Porter Jr., and Dean Wade and Sir Dominic Poynter will be on G League assignment. So none of those options will be available to the Cavs tomorrow.
And you know why? Because no matter who was playing, JB wouldn't fucking play him.
Listen, you wanted Dean Wade.
Running a 7-man rotation.
Carter, you want a Dean Wade out there. You want an Ante Zizic out there. Boy. And those two guys tag team Kevin Porter Jr. and gave him a concussion. So, you know what? I think you need to sit this one out.
I don't need to sit shit out. it's weird that he's playing seven players. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. I get the argument, but I also understand the impulse of, hey, we're winning this game. I don't really want to throw in some G League guys. At least Alfonso McKinney's giving them good minutes. Dele's giving them good minutes. And if you run those guys into the ground a little bit, I think you can survive that because you're kind of anticipating at some point that you'll get these other guys back and the rotation will round out. And I also wanted to enjoy the games. I wanted them to be wins, and they got two wins. So you know what? Just calm down there, Carter.
It's fine. It's been fun. I just hope that, like this isn't sustainable. He's going to have to play a full rotation at some point. And it better not be after the Cavs give him a contract extension because he won a few end-of-season games by running every starter into the ground.
I thought he already had a restructuring of his deal.
Did he? Either way.
Yeah, I don't. I know all Cleveland coaches are interim coaches, but it's. Yeah.
Is it time to talk about our Kenny? Boy Kenny?
Yeah, that's where I was thinking of going because I've seen the sentiment online that look at the organizational stability of the Nets, look what Kenny Atkinson was able to do there, and you know what? That's not something that comes from the coach. Kenny did a great job there, but when you look at rebuilding teams, it's so infrequent that the guy that gets you to the playoffs is the guy long-term.
Can I fight you on this? I'm excited to fight you on this.
Okay, go ahead.
The Nets, it's not like this isn't a freaking Scotty Brooks in OKC situation where the team sucked under Scotty Brooks, and then they finally they just drafted four, depending on how you like Serge Ibaka at the time, superstars. And those superstars lifted them up as they got older, and Brooks was just along for the ride. The Nets have been playing good, fundamental basketball with organizational identity on the floor for 4 to 5 years.
Yeah.
He has made rosters full of young, shitty players play well. I can't tell you how often I would watch these talentless Nets teams losing, by the way, and go, yeah, but they're playing really well. They're playing as good as their shit talent allows them to be. And
so
isn't that all we've ever asked? I guess that's all I've asked from the Cavs in the post-LeBron era is just to be more than the sum of their parts.
So assuming one or both of Kevin Love and Andre Drummond are back next year, those are two kind of temperamental former all-stars. You also have high draft picks that all play the same position that you have to manage those personalities, something that Kenny did not have any of in Brooklyn. He coached a bunch of no-ego late draft picks with the exception of D'Angelo Russell, who was kind of actually struggling until both Dinwiddie and LeVert went down and he just got to get every single touch. I think Kenny is a really good coach. I don't think that I wouldn't rock the boat again, given the type of buy-in we're seeing from the Cavs. Like I think at this point, just buying in is more important than what someone can do tactically. And
what?
I really do. I think buying in and player development should be the focus of the Cavs. If you're having if you disagree with the offense they're running or whatever the case may be, you can always make adjustments. You can bring in an assistant coach and delegate that task to him. At this point, I'm not firing Bickerstaff to bring in Kenny Atkinson and going fifth coach in 24 months. I'm not doing it if this season closes out the way that it's been going so far, where they're at least playing hard and they're showing some semblance of buying into the system.
I would like the entire Chase Down listenership to realize that Justin Rowan is sitting here being fooled by a dead coach bounce. Unbelievable. There's nothing to do with Bickerstaff. They just hated Beilein. This is a dead coach bounce if I've ever seen one. And you're being fooled by them hating their old coach so they're playing hard for the new one for a couple weeks in the deadest part of the NBA season. And furthermore, you're getting fooled by the seven-man rotation shit. He's doing this while only playing.
That's only happened in like only two games when they've been shorthanded. That's been in like two games. There has been a deeper rotation in the other games.
That is objectively untrue. He is playing these guys insane minutes since he took over.
I disagree with this.
All right, Kevin Love, 38 minutes, 37 minutes, 32, 37, 37, 40. He's kicking his ass. He's playing him like peak LeBron.
Well, Kevin Love didn't play for half the season. I mean,
oh, okay. He's literally juicing the numbers, Justin. And you're buying it, hook, line, and sinker. When you think when the new coach smell wears off, you're just gonna have Bernie's child at the helm, and you're passing on a good coach because Kyrie Irving, DeAndre Jordan, and Kevin Durant were, oh, can you believe it, a little unsettled.
I can't believe that Kyrie is pushing for Ty Lue after on his way out of town saying that he was starved for a genius basketball mind. That's
Jesus.
What a dick that guy is.
You might be right. And I think the most captivating point you made, which was the upheaval part, mm-hmm. but this is exactly my problem with JB in the first place, which is I just cannot palate the idea of them deciding he ain't the guy mid-season next year. So they better be damn sure that he's
well,
their
no, that's
guy
what
for
I'm
the
saying.
Next three
like,
years.
They are going to be able to tell whether or not there's actually buy-in. Obviously, what happens...
Ow.
Are you serious?
Yes!
If guys are listening to him in practice, they are doing what he is asking of them, and the players are getting better over the next 20 games, you don't think that means anything?
I think a lot of meaningless second half of the season for lost seasons happen.
Okay. Now, here's the other part of the question. Do you think Kenny takes this job if it's offered?
I think he's going to have better offers on the table.
Yeah, I think he's going to have better offers. I think
is a perfectly good reason not to hire Kenny.
Right.
I'd rather have a guy that I know has coached a team, a young team recently that has been more than the sum of its parts. That's mm-hmm. all I want out of the Cavs, and I'm going to be thirsty for any coach who can give it to me.
All right. Well, I'm going to stand for JB for now because I still feel like we don't know jack shit about coaches. And
well, that is correct.
And it's usually about a lot more than just one person. So I will be okay with that. But I'm pretty sure there's going to be better offers. Pretty sure Philadelphia is going to be available to him. I think Chicago might be a more attractive location than him.
Chicago's got Boylan for the next 50 years.
Good old Sarge. No, I think there's going to be options there. Hey, shit, maybe even Milwaukee if they come up short and they realize that Budenholzer is a fraud. That could be on the table. But
I'm glad that after the two most fun games of the season, I yelled at you. I'm sorry.
That's yeah, you yelled at me over JB, who is clearly the savior and a sharp dressed man.
He does dress well, and the beard is always edged up really nice.
Mm-hmm. He is a very, very well-dressed man. And if our listeners wanted to look good, ooh, like JB Bickerstaff, Carter, is there something we could help them out with?
Well, let me tell you something about JB Bickerstaff. If you were, walking down Euclid Ave and you saw him, casually, like, getting ready to go out to dinner with his fam, he's got, maybe a pair of khakis, a pair of jeans, he's got a button-up. You know what it's not going to be, Justin? It's not going to be one of those traditional button-ups that looks long and baggy, hanging around his mid-thigh.
I can't see that at all.
I'll tell you what, if I had to put money on anything, if I opened a betonline.ag account, yeah, that's cross-promotion, I would bet that JB Bickerstaff is an Untuckit man. Untuckit shirts were specifically designed to be worn untucked, no matter your size or shape. Their shirts are the perfect untucked length with more than 50 fit combinations. Untucked shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic, quote unquote, guys of all ages. Don't just take my word for it. Try Untuck it for yourself. Visit Untuckit.com and use the code BLUEWIRE for 20% off your first order. They even offer free shipping and returns on all orders in the U.S. That's UNTUCKIT.com. And promo code BLUEWIRE for 20% off your first order. I stifled a belch all through that read, Justin.
I was going to say, you were holding down something ugly. I could tell. either that or you just flat out ran out of breath. And that's something
I was
that
sitting
I
on. It's hard to breathe when you got a burp, you know?
Yeah.
But I didn't really want to stop my momentum. So
yeah, you powered through it. I appreciate that.
I think there's a lot of value in, you know, putting a little color on the rest of the read. So I thought. Yeah. I saw potential for a fun tangent by just keeping it in, and I really didn't want to like burp and excuse me, like that sucks too. So I just went for it.
Hey, you could have at least thrown in untucked shirts will leave you breathless kind of thing.
That would have been better. That's what the true pros do. I noticed, Justin, when I drink my customary mid pod diet Coke. I find I burp more when it's from the bottle as opposed to a can. Do you think there's any validity to that?
No, there definitely is. I don't know what the science behind that is.
I think it's about the amount I'm taking in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just like a little bit. It's just.
Are we just not doing phrasing?
No. We are, but, you know, for the sake of comedy.
Speaking of a lot to handle, Andre Drummond was really, really beating the Spurs up on the inside.
And he was, yeah. He was just ravaging them.
I actually did not mean to make a joke there. I meant for that to be a genuine transition. But, yeah, Drummond kind of had a bounce-back game from what we've seen from him to start.
Bro, I'm driving the Andre Drummond bandwagon.
I don't hate it. Like, he does some truly baffling things, and he really can't leave the paint defensively. Like that guy will just not close out or put an arm up. But if you're coming to the inside, you're really going to notice his presence. And you know, I'm enjoying the experience overall. Like that guy can go out there and put up some numbers.
Yeah, and like I don't know, I just like it because it's like there's a bit of chaos to it. Which is definitely very fun, in the sense, like, you know, like so much of being a bad team is like, there's a bit of like inherent monotony after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And like his chaos engine of just like, kind of just like bull in a china shopping it in the post, whether it's, you know, him just getting blocked at the rim and getting his rebound and trying to put back and then missing that. And then like knocking someone over and getting called for a foul, or when he's shaking Rudy Gay out of his fucking shoes in the post and yamming on him. It's just like, I don't know what's going to happen when he touches the ball. And I don't think
in a kind of fun way.
Yeah, it is fun. And like, I don't know. I like his style. I think that the stupid plays he makes are not as painful as other people think they are.
Yeah, like some people will paint him as a Hassan Whiteside, and that's just not the case.
Yeah, it's like, and like, yeah, sometimes he attacks off the dribble and doesn't really pass on a possession. But I'm like, whatever, their offense isn't that good anyway. And I saw a lot of bemoaning the idea that like, okay, yeah, he's attacking and drawing fouls, but he sucks at free throws, so that's not that good. I'm like, 58% from the line, going to the free throw line is still a decent.
Like, it's better than a missed shot
outcome.
Yeah, it's better than a missed shot, and you get guys in foul trouble.
I mean, that's, what, 1.16 points per 100? Or that's 1.16 points per possession, which is
don't make me do math.
Acceptable outcomes, 58 times 2. We're smart. but, yeah, like that seems good enough to me to justify those kind of plays happening. So as long as he's drawing a foul and it's going well, sure. Hasn't turned the ball over a ton. Other than the Washington game where he had 7. You know, I think it's been fun. I think he's capable of making some fun passes. I don't think he'll ever read the game at a super high level. But, like, he adds a level of physical dominance that the Cavs haven't had in this new era.
And it was nice to see. So I'm pretty sure the win against the Spurs was the first time he's played fourth quarter minutes in a Cavs win since he's come over. And there's been five of them. And he was a legitimate part of why they won. I do kind of what I was hoping for out of that game was with him coming back after seeing how the team is playing without him, just to see a little bit more focus. And I would have liked to see him attack the rim more early on, because the Spurs just didn't have anybody that could handle him. But overall,
you can't complain about 11 for 16 from the field.
Yeah, that game and the Indiana game, I felt he was good and a level of focus that I wanted to see out of him in both games. So ultimately, I'm here for the experience. I don't want to see the Cavs give him an extension this summer. I would like to see him come back next season, just take the player option or decline the player option. And
what's the lowest number you'd be okay with for an extension?
You mean the highest?
Yes. Sorry.
I guess that really depends on who we draft. Like, if we draft a Okongwu, I kind of don't really want to commit a ton of money to the position.
Couldn't agree more.
But let's say we draft Denny, for example. I would be okay with kind of giving him. If you're going off of spec and he finishes this year strong, let's say 22.
How many years?
I would prefer 3.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Your numbers, your cap sheet shouldn't be that messy, because ideally you're going to be able to trade Kevin Love at some point. Like, I don't think he's finishing his contract on the Cavs.
You know what? We've probably said that about him a million times before. You never know at this point. Like, there just might not be a trade that materializes. And we've seen fickle stars kind of change the way they're thinking. I'm still going to put money. Like, if I had to put money, I would assume that he's gone. But it wouldn't necessarily shock me, given the way we're seeing him play right now, which might just be a, hey, look, I can still play well, trade for me, burst. But he does seem to have a positive relationship with Drummond, and you never know if they try to give it one season together.
Yeah. I've liked that pairing so far, I'll say that much.
On paper, it makes sense, right?
Watching them grab 45 rebounds, him, those two, and Larry Nance was super fun. So, yeah, I just like the Drummond experience thus far. I mean, maybe that's – I think Drummond makes sense on this team. He kind of just fits no matter what the lineup is. Like, I haven't seen a lot of lineups where I'm like, oh, Drummond's out there.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like I've seen way more complaints. Do you think we're in the minority? Because it feels like I've seen way more complaints about him than any celebrations.
I don't think we're in the minority. We might be in the minority for Twitter. But overall, I think people have some excitement still for Drummond being on board, because he is a talented player. And I just think he started off his Cleveland tenure kind of rough. There wasn't a lot of focus. The report that he has disputed, but the report that he said that this was a bigger mess than Detroit, I don't think that was necessarily endearing for a lot of people. But, you know, if he keeps playing like this and if he keeps playing hard, I will allow him a couple weird possessions every game. Like, you can take your 2 threes and
the threes are dumber than the
than the coast to coast attempt.
He can kind of handle. Just saying, like, it feels a little, maybe this is just me wanting to like a new player, but like, it feels a little better than when like Tristan does it.
Yes. I
Tristan,
agree.
It's like, what the fuck?
that's never going to be normal for me. Like, I'm no longer at the point where I'm like sitting upright when he's shooting threes, but I just kind of have a more subtle shake of my head at that point.
Yeah, the Drummond and Thompson shooting threes, in a lot of ways, to me feels like the players acknowledging that the games don't matter anymore.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe part of it is, hey, Drummond's been a little banged up, so he doesn't necessarily want to go.
No, he wants to dick around. And you know,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with that move of floating around at the three-point line when you just aren't really feeling it on a possession.
I'll bet you're just a peak lazy basketball player on an afternoon, weekend afternoon run.
At this point in my life, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I've gone from Delhi to late career Andrew Bynum.
You were Coach Justin once upon a time.
And never forget it. Don't you dare forget my illustrious coaching career.
I would never.
But I am still really, really encouraged with this Sexton run continuing for as long as it has. Like this is starting to get to a point where it's like, okay, this guy is a pretty special scorer for somebody his age.
Yeah, I just don't know what that means. Like,
I don't know.
That's the last part that's like keeping me from like losing my mind. You know, I think if this happened last year to this extent, I'd be losing my mind. But well, now I'm
that,
more
that would be justified. I mean, that this would be pretty unheard of for a rookie.
Yeah, but I'm now just sort of befuddled by it. Like, it's cool and I like it in the moment. So that's definitely, and I would like to think I've enjoyed it. And I, you know, I'm not really being too nitpicky other than his hilarious poster attempts.
No, I love that damn attempt. Him cocking it back was one of the most cocky things.
I don't know if he finishes that dunk if Drew Eubanks isn't there.
I love the idea of it though. Like, I thought initially he hit the rim and that Eubanks didn't get a hand on it. But he did get the block on that.
He got the entire ball.
But my God, that was one of the most ballsy times. Like, that's endearing to me.
That's endearing, but also crazy. He can't do it. He's not that good of a dunker.
I want him to keep doing it, Carter.
And when I say he can't do it, I mean he physically can't dunk it like that on people. He doesn't get high enough.
I disagree. I think he can pull it off. Hey, he did it on Wendell Carter. In a big moment.
Carter was under the rim already. It was fun, but like, if you're really looking, he wasn't in a position to block the shot.
True, but at this point, when Sexton's not getting enough calls, he is getting more calls, and that's something that's encouraging. Sure is. Because him getting to the line is a big part of him becoming more efficient.
Yep. He had an objectively terrible floor game last night and had 26 points on 19 shots, which is perfectly acceptable.
Especially on a second night of a back-to-back. Like, I'm all about that.
Yeah, 11 free throw attempts.
It's also just wild to consider.
That's a season high, I believe.
With how bad his December was, the fact that he's shooting like 38% from three, 47% from the floor, 21 points a game. His assists are basically back to where they were last year. Basically, since the start of January, he's passing it as well as he did at the start of January last year. Like, that's all really encouraging stuff that I don't know if I necessarily expected him to sustain this type of level and keep building off of it. And I understand you saying that you don't know what that means for the long term, but these are the type of things that are kind of, I shouldn't even say a good problem to have, because it's not a problem. He's just doing good things. And I think you can build off of a guy that's becoming a very good scorer. Competent passer. He's starting to make some of those corner reads, which was encouraging. He had a great one to Delhi against the Spurs. I think you can build off of that, and then you can go into next season, let's say he sustains this, and say, all right, you don't necessarily have to score that many, but if you could give us 20 points a game, 3.5 assists, and play defense, that starts to become one hell of a player.
Yeah, we just got to get to the defense part. I think my whole perception of this
it's
will
really
change
bad.
If he can figure out the defense.
Because you look at him physically, he should be a good defender. Like, there's no scenario where this guy should be the worst defender on the team. And by every single metric you look at, on off, pip'em, RPM, whatever you prefer, he is the worst defender on this team. Yeah, eye test. He is the worst defender on this team. And a lot of that has to do with what he does off ball, because he can be a tenacious on ball defender, and he can make kind of,
and also often isn't.
Yes. Yes. I agree with that. But he's also capable of making spectacular defensive plays that someone like Garland isn't able to, but possession by possession, it is a lot worse than anybody else on the team.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, if you've done the job right, people won't be sure you've done anything at all.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's really the best path for a young player to be a good defender is, like, just do your job better.
Yeah.
Do your job as well as you can and, you know, hope you're not getting burned. But he's getting burned and not being particularly disruptive. That's kind of my problem with him ultimately is the steal numbers have never been that good. Mm-hmm. And it's like if you're going to be bad off ball, you at least got to be a good free safety, which he has the body and athletic profile to do that. But even in college, his steal numbers were pretty mediocre. So yeah. I don't know how much of this is fixable. You would love to think that it was because he's guarding taller shooting guards. But unfortunately, the numbers aren't much better when Garland hits the bench. So
No. And
I don't know.
In all fairness, I don't know what to go there. And you compare it to last year. I mean, he had his best stretch of the year when he was playing alongside whether it be Delly or Brandon Knight playing in the point guard position. Like that's one of the funniest things is people say, oh, well, he was adapting to a new position. No, well, his turnaround last year happened when he switched to that position. And this, like, he 100% profiles as a combo guard. Like, he is not a point guard, and that's not necessarily a problem as long as he can capitalize and make the most of his tools defensively. And we saw against the Spurs, classic example is on the Spurs of DeMar DeRozan, who is one of the hardest working players in the league, has all the tools defensively, but just never was able to add that.
But DeRozan doesn't have the lateral quickness that Sexton has.
No, but he does have a lot more length. Like he's long for it too. Yes,
but I'm just saying, like Sexton should be a good bulldog in opposing point guards.
Yeah, at the very least, right
now. He's getting killed at the point of attack. Even
yeah, at the very least, in the basically 1,300 minutes he's played since the Jordan Clarkson trade. The Cavs defense is 15.1 points worse when he's on the floor. And that it should never be that bad. As a frame of reference, the defense is 2 points better when Garland's on the floor. It's 4.4 points better when KPJ is on the floor. Like, good God, man. Like, that's it's so much worse than any other teammate. And I
just don't understand, like, if the defense is going to stay that bad, is the right move still just to move into six man? Because you could argue that a good defending Sexton at this scoring profile is a starter on a good team.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like
you just get a couple playmaking wings, which I know are hard to find, but they exist, and you're cooking with gas.
Yeah, yeah. Ultimately, if he continues to score at this rate, like I agree. I think it's going to have to come on defense, and that's going to determine what his role is going to be in the NBA. I do think as Garland, as KPJ become more consistent and are able to shoulder more of the offensive load, then that might enable Sexton to dedicate a little bit more of his effort to the defensive end because we've seen that he's capable of those plays. Like, if he is able to make the most of his 6'8 wingspan and actually defend twos, then you could start experimenting with trying to play Garland, Sexton, and KPJ. I think you might still have some struggles, especially as they are still this young. But if KPJ is really 6'7", hashtag height watch, that might become a little bit more feasible. But ultimately, I agree that what he does defensively is going to determine where he plays in the NBA. And I don't think it's necessarily moving goalposts with him. He just clears all of these kind of markers that we've set for him. Like he's come so far compared to who he was at the start of his career that he's already accomplished a lot of the things that we've kind of identified that we'd like to see from him. And this is the next one and perhaps the biggest.
Yeah. I hope he gets there because I really have enjoyed watching his offensive game develop. And it's, you know, it's funny because like, as critical as we can be of Sexton, and the development is there. It's just really slow. and this actually might be the best case for why he'll be a good defender down the line, is things haven't happened at the pace we might hope for him, but like it's almost like imperceptible where it's you know, it's like the what's the old thing about like a frog in a boiling pot or whatever?
I'm no help here.
Well, it's like I think it's frogs. It might be some other creature, but basically, like you could put like a some creature in a pot of water on a burner, and it will literally not notice that the water is getting hot because it's imperceivably slow, and eventually the water boils, and they are just like, oh shit, I guess I'm dead, like. That's kind of that's the Sexton development curve.
That's me drinking at a bar when I stand up and I'm like, whoa, shit, this is a problem.
There you go. yeah. So I think that, I guess it's not really a real scientific thing. I just looked it up. It's like a parable.
Yeah. I don't know necessarily if Sexton's development has been slow overall. Like the turnaround with the shooting was quick, but the stuff that he's not naturally gifted with. Yeah. Like I think the mechanics were there for a shot. So it made sense that if he dedicated himself to that, that would
come. I'm talking understanding basketball.
I was about to get to that. Yeah. I agree.
It comes slow, and then it's like, oh, he's kind of manipulating the defense a little bit to get where he wants to go right now. It's not just pure speed, which it was in season one. And it's like, okay, he beat the guy. And yeah, you'll still see fits and starts, but like he's just got like a little bit of craft that he didn't have prior.
Yeah, he's starting to understand how to make the most of his physical tools, and that stuff is coming to him. It's just been a process, and I agree with you there. The one thing I think both you and I have said about Sexton since day one is whatever his ceiling is, he's likely going to hit it, and for him to get to this level of a score, and I know offensive numbers are a little inflated this year, or last couple of years, but I still think that it's meaningful. Like I don't think that this is something that you can just brush aside. And I know people will point to, well, look at the Cavs record. They only have 19 wins. But I don't think this is a case of Hall of numbers. And I think overall, the way that people look at whether or not a player's numbers are meaningful is flawed and kind of reductive. So I do think that Cavs fans should be really encouraged by what we've seen from Sexton this year, even though he still does have a ways to go when it comes to translating his individual play to team success.
Couldn't agree more, Justin.
Thanks. That's you really added a lot there. Is it time to wrap it up? I've lost track.
You pivot or wrap it if you wanted, but fine.
You know what? I lost track of time because I just enjoyed talking to you again, man.
How was yours for an hour 15? That's not true. We started late.
I was going to say we started late because we were trying to work on a failed bit. So yeah, you know, don't put that on me. Tell the people about your Chicago trip. How was that, Carter?
It was great. It was really tiring because we had a baby with us, but she did great. Handled a 6-hour drive with aplomb, and I'm proud of her.
Well, congrats on the sex. All right, I want to wrap this up now. Big thanks to all of our listeners. Remember, if you want to support the podcast, you can do so by subscribing to the Chase Down Premium, just 99 cents for your first month, $5 a month after that. You can also support us the old-fashioned way by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, and resubscribe, and help cook those books. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. And if you want to be part of our Chase Down Discord, you can send a screenshot of your review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. We really do appreciate all the support. So big thanks once again to all of our listeners. Thanks to my co-host, Carter, for putting up with me. And until next time, go Cavs.